This episode of Knobs is brought to you by Atomic Film and Design. Atomic Film and Design has helped dozens of corporate and creative clients strengthen their brand with graphic web and film design from historic concert venues, local businesses, and record labels. Atomic Film and Design works with a network of creative professionals, like Chris and myself, to uncover what makes your business or your band truly unique. Show the world what you can do with a little help from Atomic Film and Design. Start your project now at atomicfilmshop.com.
You're listening to Knobs, a podcast created by music geeks for music geeks. Now, here's your hosts, Matt Diamond and Chris Nickel.
Welcome back to another episode of Knobs. I am one of your hosts. My name is Matt Diamond. The other?
You are Matt Diamond, and I am Chris Nickel.
Hi, Chris Nickel. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's a busy week in music. With South by Southwest kicking off next week, we won't be back. Yeah, I guess it kicks off March 12th, right? So we won't be back before it starts. And that's kind of a big deal, especially with all of the news that's happening with that. We had International Women's Day, which is kind of a cool segue into having an amazing band like Muna on the podcast today. And then there's some other shit to talk about as well, like Muna with their political statement that they made on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, so let's touch on that real quick. Break it down.
Yeah, so they're performing I Know a Place, and it's on Jimmy Kimmel, and they add a verse at the end of the song, and she goes, "Even if our skin or our gods look different, I believe all human life is significant.
Wow.
I throw my arms open wide in resistance. He's not my leader, even if he's my president."
Wow.
And it's like, it's right at the crescendo of that verse, and it kind of explodes. My wife and I played it. My wife just, like, you could tell she was getting emotional just watching it. And again, for a band that has that opportunity, it's like, I can only imagine what it's like for a band that is not huge, and they get an opportunity to play a show like Kimmel or Fallon,
mm-hmm.
and to have the gall to stand up there and do that. That just shows you how strong of women they are, and I find it so fitting that we have them on this week when we are celebrating women all week. You know, it's pretty fitting, man.
Yeah, it's very poignant, very timely. It's funny because we've had some of these other guests on the show where we see that not only like you like the band, but then you see, or the artist, and then you see the potential that other people will kind of, gravitate towards them on a grander scale. And that is certainly the case. Muna, not only getting, like, the fact that they are getting time slots on late night television and on these big festival bills and, playing. We talk about them selling it like the Bowery Ballroom and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is certainly the case. And if I can just kind of digress for a second, that has also been the case for some other guests that we've had on the show, including Molly Birch, who we kind of had her on, I think it's about a month ago, and then her album came out, and then we started to see some of these glowing reviews. So I do want to reiterate the fact that although maybe you don't know some of the guests that appear here on Knobs, you will, and that is really the case, especially when it comes to a band like Muna. And I want to kind of jump from Muna, and then we're going to start with this other three-piece band from L.A. called Low Moon. And the significance between the two is that they were on tour together. So therefore, kind of like their agency got in touch and said, like, listen, we've got an opportunity for you to talk to both of these guys within the same day. And it's really fitting music. And I think that it's kind of this stripped back approach as far as what Low Moon does. And the story behind them is kind of this romantic tale of people congregating in L.A., chasing a dream. And then all of a sudden, one thing leads to another. And next thing you know, a band like Low Moon is recording a record with Chris Walla, lead guitar player from Death Cab for Cutie, recorded their album. And I kind of touched on the fact that they named their first single Loveless. I'm like, those are pretty big shoes to fill, especially if you know what I'm talking about in regards to My Bloody Valentine. But what's your take on a band like Low Moon, Chris?
Well, Low Moon, a touchback on Loveless there, because I was, as we do our discovery, I like to call it discovery, this week for the band, I read a interview, I believe it was on Noisy, on Vice, and it was about Low Moon, and they touch on that My Bloody Valentine reference, and they literally stand back and say, listen, no, that's not, we have like great admiration for My Bloody Valentine, but that's, it was not necessarily anything to do with them when we named our track. It had complete different context to it, and we would never want to steal from My Bloody Valentine. So it was kind of cool. You can tell that there's like such respect there, as there should be. But mm-hmm. Low Moon's crazy. You've said a few times, and you said last week, Strip Back, and you can get that from their recording, and there's not much of it online at all. But there's an air there. There's kind of a depth of air in their music. But when you watch some of the live performances, it's fucking heavy, man. Like that, I sent you a link today. You referenced the Bowery Ballroom. They must have been on tour with Muna, and it's a live performance of, it's their end track, Loveless. And the live version of that. And it is heavy, really heavy song. So it's really interesting to hear it kind of translate to live. But that air is still there. I like it. I like how there's just kind of an openness to the music, and you know, the empty space is an instrument within itself with mm-hmm. the music, which is great. So
yeah, within both bands, 80s references kind of pop up, not only in the interview but just in other things that I've read about them. A band like Low Moon, kind of, for some reason I think of bands like Jesus and Mary Chain that were kind of like mm-hmm. you know, not a big over the top rock band, but there's certainly elements of that in it. So you know, the Strip Back kind of stuff, that's as far as what we know, because of the one single that was like officially released to the world. He even, you know, the front man of that band actually comes out and we talk about the fact that, you know, that there's really only one song that's kind of floating around the atmosphere with this band right now, and they're still getting such a huge response, and they have, like, you know, people that are coming out all of the time to go check out, you know, the band, and that, you know, things are really on the up and up for these guys. So I'm really happy that we were able to not only have Muna and Low Moon on the show, but to have Muna on the show at, you know, such a timely point in their career, and touching on women, you know, International Women's Day, or women in general, you know.
You and I celebrate women every day, but this show can absolutely do their part in celebrating women within the arts community, and especially music specifically. You know, it's again, touching back on that, it's amazing to see women with such a powerful voice in music, and we've seen it through many, many generations, but it's not lacking in 2017, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. I guess a couple other facts just to bring up about the band, you know, both kind of LA area bands, although not, you know, not every member of both band necessarily from there, but I guess kind of got their start in LA. And there's a few different other articles that you can kind of like read about the band. But here's another cool little fact that Samuel Stewart, who is the member of Low Moon, his dad is Dave Stewart.
And from the Eurythmics.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. Huge, huge deal in the UK. But we have a chance to sit down and talk with Matt Lowell, who is the front man of Low Moon. And I think that's a great fitting way to start off the episode. And then after that interview comes back, we'll you know, give you a little taste of some of Muna's music. And then we're going to talk to Naomi and the front woman of Muna. And I think it's time that we get right at it. So this
sounds
is
good, man.
Yeah, really great to connect with you too again, Chris. And then when both interviews are all said and done, we'll come back and tell you what to expect for next week, because we've got another great kind of a doubleheader for you next week as well. But enough of us. Let's get into the chat. We're headed to I think we're going to Minnesota. I think that's where I'm headed, to Minneapolis.
Yes.
But regardless, let's start off this episode with a great little chat with Matt from Low Moon on Knobs. This is an exciting time for you. I want to talk about LA very briefly. I kind of imagine there's a lot of bands doing their thing there. What's the scene like? And is everyone directly from LA in the band?
No. None of us are, actually. I'm from New York, and Sam is from the UK, and Crescent is from Colorado. So we all met in LA. So it's an interesting one, because it's not an, you know, we're an LA based band, but I think a lot of the influences come from a lot of different places, you know,
can I,
and that's kind of the beauty of it.
Can I ask, was there this element of chasing the dream because so many of those dreams happen in L.A.? Is that why everybody congregated there?
You know, I think, I know for me, you know, I moved out there because I was in New York and I wanted to, pursue the dream, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it was happening out there and it was easier to be out there than it was in New York. And so I just moved out and met the guys. I had a batch of songs that I thought were, you know, pretty cool, and met the guys, and they loved them, and we just started jamming on them and developing a sound and working on it for, you know, a long time in a vacuum, you know, just mm-hmm. kind of with the blinders on. Hey, let's try to make something here, and turned out to be, you know, Low Moon and I think if we hadn't been in LA and we hadn't all, you know, I think we'd all been kind of doing music for a while, and I think it was, the timing was really great because we all just really committed to this. We all fully went in on it, you know. Mm-hmm. We were like, okay, let's go for this, you know, let's try to make something really that we're really proud of, and I think that was kind of the essence of the band.
When you say that you met the band, like the other members of the band, how did you guys all meet?
I met Chrysanta first through a friend. He said, I met this girl, Chrysanta, out, and she just moved here and in a similar situation to you. And she, you know, she's looking for a band. And so I said, oh, I'd love to meet her. And I met her and I played her some songs, and she was just really into it. And I said, I loved her personality, and I could tell that she was just a brilliant musician, and it was just stemmed from that. And then, you know, my whole thing is just vibe and commitment to music. You know, it's so important to me, and the people that I and musicians that I want to surround myself with it's number one on their list. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's like, this is our life. This is what we do. This is the only thing we know how to do. We have to commit to it. And that's what it was like for Chrysanta, and obviously the same thing. Sam was a very similar situation. I'd heard about this guy who played guitar, and his name was Sam, and it was just like, that was kind of a scene in LA thing, you know. It was like, yeah, you know, he knows you through, you know, some people, and it was just like that. And I said, oh, I'd love to meet him because he's a great guitar player. I've heard him play, and then same exact thing. Showed him some songs. He goes, oh, I really like this. What's going on? And I said, I don't know. Trying to figure it out. You know, we're out here trying to figure it out. And we did, you know, we spent a long time just like working on it, working on what we wanted to be. And everyone in the band's voice is so essential to the spirit of what comes out the speakers on the other end. Like that's the thing, you know? So yeah, so it was really, very organic, very music centric. I'd say completely music centric, and it's paying off. Like, you know, we're just loving it. We're loving what we're doing, and we're having a lot of fun discovering it together. You know.
Yeah, I bet. You know, when we talk about Sam, some listeners might know Dave Stewart. Is Sam's dad a fan of your band?
Sam's dad loves our band, which for Sam is a little bit weird because Sam's dad hadn't really connected with other bands that Sam had been in as much as he has with this. That's what Sam tells me. I don't know if I really believe him.
Believe it. Know, believe like, it.
Yeah. But no, Dave loves it. And I'm always a little bit like, oh, Dave's at a show. This is really cool. And it's, you know, it's great. It's amazing. You know, obviously he's a legend.
Yeah. No pressure. No pressure there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when we talk about the love, you call a song Loveless. You're bound to get a little comparisons here. What type of music influenced you on your journey? What kind of stuff are you guys into?
You know, I'm really into the, you know, to the older. There was a weird time where bands like the Blue Nile were, you know, Paul Buchanan's writing had a big influence on me. Patty from Prefab Sprout had a big influence on my writing.
Cool.
Talk, obviously, Mark Hollis is an amazing writer. Mm-hmm. So there was kind of this left-center band that got forgotten, but when people are into them, they're really into them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that just really into those records, Hats. And then, you know, I grew up with a really classic songwriter background with Paul Simon, and Bruce Springsteen's probably my all-time favorite of ever, and Bob Dylan, and, you know, I'm from Long Island, New York, so Billy Joel's in there, and David Bowie. So, and then, you know, modern bands, Radiohead, obviously, it's every alternative band's pinnacle of success, you know?
Sure.
They've done it on their own terms for their entire career.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and there's just, that's kind of the thing, and everyone has something that they're really into, you know? It's also like, you know, we're all into soundtrack music and Johan Johansson and stuff that, and, you know, just a bunch of different things. It's all in there.
Modern music moving maybe towards Seattle. We've got a guy like Chris Walla, who used to be a member of Death Cab. He sat in the producer's chair. How did that connection happen as far as Chris Walla goes?
Yeah. Really, really weirdly, I had met Chris ages ago in passing through a friend named John Vanderslice.
And he's great. Always, he's still making music. Yeah, absolutely. Bar Zook artist, right?
Yeah. Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was years ago. And I basically just always had Chris in the mirror. I just really loved his sounds, you know, his production. And I, when I was looking for producers and when we were talking to people, it was basically, it was more of, do you get it? Do you have the spirit of what this band is trying to accomplish? Because I think, you know, in my head, I had a really clear vision of what I wanted this record to be, you know, and I knew it was going to change, and I knew it was going to move, and I knew the goalpost was going to move forward and back and sideways on the journey. But we wanted someone and a team that was assembled around it to at least get it at the core. And Chris heard some songs in the demos, and he just got it. And I met Chris for coffee, and he said, I'm really busy. I really wanted to do this because I'm really connecting with these demos. The timing won't work right now. And I said, well, that's okay. And then I was talking to this guy, Frank Tites, as well, who did the Gautier album. And he was in a similar situation. He was just like, I really love this. And I met Chris again, and Chris said, there's this guy, Frank, who's really beautiful, and I heard some production, and I never met him, but I think he's amazing, and maybe you should meet him. And I said, that's really weird, because I met him already, and I really connected with him. And I said, maybe we can all do it together. And everyone looked at me like I was crazy. But I connected those two, and somehow I really do believe this was meant to happen this way. This record was just meant to be made this way. The timing ended up clicking into place, and it worked for both producers. And it was a beautiful, beautiful partnership. Everyone worked so, so hard on trying to get this record to a place we were all happy with.
Wow.
And I owe a lot to Chris and Frank. Like, we learned so much. And I think one of the big advantages about Chris was, for me at least, and the band, was that he was in a band. And so
right,
he understands
right, right.
band dynamic. He understands pressures of record companies, management, agent, you know, timelines. He just understood the whole gamut of what, and he understands what it's like to be a new band with some pressures of trying to finish a record. So that was something that was really high up on the list for us. We wanted someone that we could learn from, you know, and we learned so much from him. He's amazing.
Yeah, he is the guy not only to be a member of the band, but he's produced so many of his own records as well.
Exactly.
What was
it? Sound fucking great.
Oh, dude, absolutely. And even he has gone on to do some solo stuff. I don't know if you've heard his
Tape Loops. Is,
yeah, I mean, like
that is like one of our favorite records. It's on all the time.
And it's certainly nothing like he had released some solo stuff before that he was singing and playing on before. But this, I love. I'm an experimental guy myself. The weirder, the better.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing.
It is. It's a beautiful record.
Yeah, it's so good. And part of when I've heard that the first time, I said, this is a guy. And he's so incredible at that, you know, in the studio. His tape loop technique is just amazing. So that was really part of it. That was really fun.
Yeah, I bet. Let's talk about in studio real quick. I love to nerd out because this show here, we talk about not only in studio, but on stage. Tell me about some of the tools that was created for the record, because I hear this really, I love the sparse approach to what I've heard from this record, and I'm a big fan of that. I hear even a little Jesus and Mary chain kind of stuff in
oh,
here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys work in the box or out of the box. Can you tell me about some of the tools and how the record
works?
We
work both ways.
Right.
Yeah, we work both ways. It starts usually on a DAW, mostly if we're doing it ourselves. And Chris actually was working a lot on Logic. But I worked with the band and I in my studio at my house. I have a little shed garage that we converted into kind of our mess room, basically. Yeah. CP70 is in there. There's like a Sub 37. There's some synths. And basically we started on Logic. And we built out from Logic, and we brought it to Chris and Frank. And from there, we spent a lot of time on outboard gear. Chris has I'm forgetting the desk he has. He has the old Hollywood Bowl desk in Hall of Justice. So
yeah, that's what it's called. I was wondering, what did he call that? I was going to say Gotham City or something. His Hall of Justice is his studio, right?
Yeah, the Hall of Justice, exactly. Yeah, no.
Very cool.
And so he's got, you know, so the whole record was done basically, started on in the box with plugins and then moved completely to analog gear. But you know what? Some of that stuff that we made and with Plugin World was made the record. And there's I think that's the thing with modern music and bands, you know, you can do the whole thing in so many ways and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was like, in Loveless, there's a bunch of stuff like, there's a bunch of rocks that Frank, was rubbing together to get a certain kind of texture. And, there's just a lot of detail and we worked so hard on finding the detail. There's tape loops, there's harmonium, there's a bunch of stuff that was just, a lot of it just came from experimenting, and then patching together to fit to the emotion, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's neat when you have the time and to be able to really get under the microscope and get down to those details,
yeah.
Right?
That's kind of the beauty. That was the beauty of making this record, just taking our time and trying to discover stuff every day,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even the, when I'm looking at some of the artwork and some of the visual stuff that you've done with it, it's a really, really beautiful attention to detail. I find the aesthetic that kind of goes along with Low Moon really translates not only visually, but what you're hearing as well.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I appreciate that because that's so important to us. We just take it really seriously on that end because I think that you can get a feeling from every part and every angle of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the artwork, if you get a feeling and you kind of understand where the band's coming from, then that works in our favor.
Yeah.
Because then you don't have to work so hard when you hear the music.
Yeah, but
makes a little bit more sense.
They certainly complement each other as well. And
exactly.
That's, yeah.
And there's a relationship there and there's a conversation between the two.
Mm.
And that's just like so important.
Mm-hmm. Well, you nailed it.
Well, all of our favorite bands do that,
Yeah, really. That is true.
And that's the way that I think that this band especially operates. It's like, they do that, whoever it is, bands that we look up to, bands that we think paved the way for us, that's the way they did it. Their attention to detail paid off for them. And so, you have to have the attention to detail at every corner, so on every turn. So
yeah,
I'm glad that people are recognizing that because it's, took us some time to get there, but I'm really happy we did.
Absolutely. I think it's something that you can identify with as you're listening to the record, to be able to look through the artwork and kind of feel like it's a complete package. And a lot of people, you see, we miss that now because this digital age that we have is kind of eliminated all of that, the tangible quality to picking up a record and being able to flip through it and be able to see that.
Totally.
It's a dying art for sure.
It's interesting vinyl is coming back in a way that, I don't know, maybe vinyl will be the, people are fighting for Spotify and iTunes to have credits,
Mm-hmm,
And I think that's great.
Yeah, me too. This has got you very busy, or at least your schedule has you guys going right through, from what I can see, right through until June. And if you pardon my ignorance, I don't know that you have been on a big, you know, grand scale tour like this. You're in Minnesota. No. Minnesota tonight. You'll be here in our hometown of Toronto on the 20th.
Oh, you're from Toronto?
Yeah, that's where I'm talking to you from right now. So we'll
amazing.
I'll be coming out to see. And the Drake is a lovely little room too, where you guys are playing in Toronto.
I haven't been there, but I love Toronto. Yeah. I'm a huge hockey fan, and I played hockey up in Toronto. And
oh, is that right?
I'm going to try to go to the Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah, you should. And it's everything is so close to each other as well. So from where you're playing is just a cab ride to go check out the Hockey Hall of Fame too. So
I love it there. I love it there.
Like, have you ever been to the UK or France or any of these places? Like, you're playing Germany, dude. You're going to Berlin. Have you done any of this before?
I know. No, I've been to the UK for because I had some friends there. But this tour that we're doing, that's just like a dream. You know, it's going to be a dream for us.
Amsterdam too. Come on.
Yeah, Amsterdam. Berlin, wow. Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
And then
Paris is the one that we're the most excited for.
Well, how could you not be? Not the culture, the food, the people, but your music lends itself to this vision of being in Paris. It's very, very.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I hope so. I mean, I know they're hard. They're a tough one to crack.
Yeah, but if you put it this way, man, you nail it out of the park in France, you're going to be fine no matter where you go.
That's what people say. I hope so, man. Thank you.
Yeah, and then
I needed that.
Yeah, and then to be part of something like Governor's Ball in June too, 3 days in Atlanta for the Shaky Knees Festival too, man. The future's bright for you. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it is. It's really well. I don't. You know, for us, it's just like day by day trying to do what we can control, which is just try to put on great shows and you know, develop the band, you know, develop the music and see where it takes us, because that's the. You know, that's the vehicle. It just comes down to the music. And we're just, you know, delivering it. So to be able to get the opportunities to play those festivals, and it's just amazing, you know. We're really thankful. People are taking, you know, I mean, right now it's interesting because we've only got Love Us out, and there's people coming out to see it. And yeah. So it's like every day we're like, oh, wow, that was really cool. I can't believe that happened.
I guess you're doing something right.
Yeah, I think we're on the path. Yeah, it seems like we're on the right path.
Well, listen, you continue down that path, and I will continue to support everything that you do, and I really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Oh, no, of course, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Matt Lowell from Low Moon. And if you missed their last show that just happened in Toronto a couple weeks back, don't worry. I have a feeling that we're going to see and hear from them very, very soon, and probably on a grander scale. Not that there's anything wrong with the Drake in Toronto, but I've seen it happen time and time again. Let's go from that band to a band that they were on tour with and opening up for. And a very lovely but brief chat with the front woman of Muna. This is my talk with Naomi right here on Knobs. Naomi.
Hello, hello. Yes, it is I.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Where are we talking to you from right now? Where are you hanging out?
I am in St. Paul and with the rest of Muna at the moment.
Ah, okay. So you are on the same tour with Low Moon right now?
Yes. Yeah.
I just talked to those dudes a little while ago. They're in Minnesota as well, so that's cool. Very nice.
Yeah, they're here as well. I'm not sure exactly where they are, but they're in our midst.
We'll worry about you instead right now, all right?
Okay.
Cool. Let's talk about your band. Let's talk about your formation and how you met and began playing music together with Muna.
Sure. We met in college. We were all living in the same apartment complex at the time. We'd become acquainted as friends before this, but there was a particular night where we were all hanging out in my dorm room before going to a party, and I was playing the guitar. And Josette, who was a guitar major at USC, just said, you're good at the guitar. Why have we never tried playing together? And I was like, I don't know. We should. And then Katie invited herself to the jam. And she, at the time, was messing around on Ableton and learning to produce some stuff. And so she came to the jam as well and did some cool Ableton stuff. We just wrote a song that night, the first time that we jammed together. And the rest is history. We've been a band ever since.
Sweet. How long ago was that?
I think that was the end of 2013. late, like October, November.
The longevity of that, even now, if we're talking about 4 years and we're here to talk about a brand new album, of course, and the new album about you. I know that you're a band who produces their own music. Let's talk about how this album actually came to life.
Totally. It kind of started, the writing process of it started in like 2014, and it's been in a work in progress ever since then. A lot of the songs have been around since then, I mean. But yeah, we recorded it and produced it in a series of bedrooms all over the U.S., like in my, senior year house in Los Angeles, and an apartment that we were all living in one summer in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. We recorded it all, produced it all ourselves in a little incubator that we took with us wherever we were, basically.
And was there outside help as far as the mix or master and stuff like that?
Yeah. Dan Greck Moggerot, he did a little bit of additional production, and he mixed the record. He's the absolute best. And Ted Jensen mastered it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
We talk about L.A. and New York. As far as the scene and the contemporaries of other, bands that you've been rolling with, what's it like as far as the respective scene where you guys are all from?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think we've just been so lost in the process of making music that it's been a little bit strange to associate ourselves with a particular scene. In L.A., it's interesting. We kind of, I guess, come from the scene of like bands at our college, and people that play music at the school that we go to, and they're going to school for music. But LA is kind of a strange like live music place in terms of finding a scene for poppy bands. There's definitely a scene for like garage rock and more grungy style music. But I think we're falling into a little bit of a scene now, which is really interesting and nice. There's a lot of amazing women musicians in Los Angeles that we've been lucky to get to know and are continuing to meet, which is super cool.
Yeah, very
cool. we're still sort of figuring it out, I guess.
Let's focus a little bit on some women here. I read similarities to both like Kate Bush in the 80s. Does that resonate with you?
Oh, totally. Katie showed me Kate Bush like one of the first times that we ever hung out. And I got obsessed with the album Hounds of Love. But yeah, Katie's been into the Kate Bush for a long time. I love her. She's amazing.
Very cool. Sticking with maybe that theme as far as being women in a band, what does it mean to you to be, within a landscape of this industry that is seemingly like run by men and sexism? What does it mean as far as, being three women in a band?
I think that we're all just stubborn and confident enough to not let it shake us too much. We've been fortunate in a lot of ways to have a lot of the men that we work with be super supportive and, into our vision and making what we want, sort of like helping that come to life. We haven't encountered too much like industry sexism, but obviously like in a live context, we've encountered just like little microaggressions of condescension and stuff with like people at venues. Like, I don't know, it really hasn't been too terrible. We've been pretty lucky, but I think it's because we do roll as a unit and we're maybe look a little bit tougher that way. I think I feel a lot more, I think that women who are alone face a lot more hardship in that sense.
I've had some female guests on this podcast before, including, I don't know if you know who Noveller is, but she's kind of a one-woman band. She plays instrumental, kind of crazy loopy guitar stuff.
Oh, sweet.
And this question, I think, seems rather fitting for you as well. Do you get legions of girl fans that come up to you after the show to tell you to talk about this empowerment thing?
Yeah, we had an amazing experience actually last night in Kansas City, and so many young women just stayed after, and young men too, just stayed after to say, that they felt empowered by the lyrics or just the fact that seeing girls on stage playing music meant something to them. It's not just very humbling, because it meant the world to me, as a young person to see female like rock stars that I thought were cool and like great at music and just killing it. There's something that's special about that, and to be associated with that kind of empowerment in any capacity is really, really humbling and cool for us.
Sure. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
last year, Lollapalooza and Jimmy Fallon. This year, Jimmy Kimmel, the Governor's Ball, a lengthy tour. Let's talk about reaching a brand new audience. What does it mean to be on stages or platforms like that?
We try to, I mean, I think that we try to just create an environment where people feel like they can let go and find some solace and peace and happiness or catharsis in a live context. But yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, we're on our first headline tour right now, and I think we're just sort of realizing that we have an audience, if that makes sense, because we've been on some opening tours, and at that point, we're just trying to go on stage and, like, kill it as much as we can and try to win over people in the audience, but going to places in the country and in North America in general, it's very just surreal for us to know that we have people that care about our record and care about us as a band. It's just super cool. And we try to make use of whatever platform that we have to speak about things that we think are important and try to make people feel safe. It's a little bit of a learning process for sure. We're still just getting our feet wet, I think.
What does it mean to sell out a room like the Bowery?
It's just surreal. It's super surreal. We sold out our show in LA, and we've been kind of selling out a few shows along the run. It's just you don't expect it to happen, because you think that the only people that come to your shows are like your parents and like some of your friends from school and stuff, just to be nice. But yeah, now that we sold out Bowery, it's still really crazy. It's super cool.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's neat. Even from people that have just been connected to your music in the past little while, and then I look at some of the dates, I'm like, dude, these girls are selling at the Bowery. There's certainly something happening here. It's not
definitely.
You know, that's not just your parents.
I know. Yeah. Yes. And we've only just realized that.
Unless they're like really connected, I don't think it's just.
Yeah.
Your parents.
Who knows? Honestly, who knows? Our parents can be pulling some wild stuff, buying a bunch of tickets.
dude, whatever it takes to fill the room. That's really all that matters. You know, I see this list of tour dates, and I'll let you guys get on. But what's next for Muna after this tour wraps up? What will 2017 bring for you?
Just a lot more shows, I think. We're trying to write as much as we can in the next, you know, periods of downtime that we have. I think that we're going to be on the road a lot. That's what I anticipate happening. Just working. Working our little butts off as much as we can, and then trying to write new music.
Well, the future seems bright, and I'm very happy to not only be able to share your music in this chat with my audience as well, but we'll continue to support you and hopefully pop down to the Drake to see you on Monday night as well.
Yes, we're so excited. We love Toronto, and I'm not blowing smoke up your butt. I love Toronto. So,
blow all the smoke you want. That's fine. That's just fine. So there you go. That was the lovely Naomi of Muna, and a nice little chat while they're on the road and kind of just killing it. And that's I think that's a fair statement to make, because like I said earlier in the episode, I think that everybody's gonna know about these bands very, very soon. I want to say thanks to Matt from Low Moon as well, and to everybody else who has been in touch within the past little while. We've been getting lots of shares. We're at just about 20,000 downloads of the show. We're going to ask everybody once again to get out there, spread the word, and you know, hit up social. And if you want to reach out and have a conversation with Chris or myself, it's pretty easy. Matt at Knobs Podcast and Chris at KnobsPodcast.com. Next week, we have an interesting tie-in with this one, Chris, and I think that we are going to put it this way. Sometimes the more so-called reputable e-zines or online websites or online magazines that we read all the time about music, sometimes they can be a little cutthroat, to say the least.
Especially ones that we love and adore.
Yes, and I have gone time and time again to certain publications or to certain websites to read about reviews that have been so polar opposite of what my personal feelings might be. And although that might not necessarily be the case in this point, but next week we have a band or the frontman of a band or a project that got absolutely ripped by a publication online, or at least on Instagram, and I thought it was a really unprofessional move personally. But although I don't think that I need to name that publication, I'm going to tell you that we have one of the members of Vampire Weekend on the show, and his name is Chris, and he has a brand new project called Dams of the West, and we are going to have that band on, or we're going to have him chat with us for a little bit. And then we also have another cool project called Space Above. And you might know another band called the Naked and Famous. And the Naked and Famous have an offshoot called Space Above, and we get to talk to that guy who's made, you know, I would say this is kind of electronic, darker music, but his name is Aaron Short, and Aaron joins us right here on the program. So not only have we got, you know, the Dams of the West stuff here, but we've got another offshoot. So I guess Dams of the West, an offshoot of Vampire Weekend, and the Naked and Famous offshoot, Space Above, and their debut album, which is called Still. And we're going to talk to both of them next week. So we've got a nice little doubleheader for you. And then we're still waiting on confirmation for yet another interview that's coming down the pipes that I'm really excited about. But we'll get there when we get there. All right?
Sounds good, my brother.
Thank you, my friend. And to each and every one of you, have a wonderful week. We will be back next week. Don't forget, go get some of that in your life. Space Above. And listen to the Dams of the West record. It's really pretty good. I'm not going to lie. All right? Those are my 2 cents. I'm Matt Diamond.
I'm Chris Nickel.
This has been Knobs. Brought to you by Atomic Film Design.